Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're talking about a new Tesla note from Credit Suisse. A very solid note overall, I thought, and they have increased their price target on Tesla stock. We'll talk about some of the thoughts from that. Also got updates on FSD and the supply chain, some news from Ford and Stellantis, and a couple other things as well. First, let's take a look at the markets. Tesla today actually faring okay in a pretty tough macro environment. Tesla ending down 1.8% to $1,030.51. That was a pretty decent outperformance of the NASDAQ, though the NASDAQ ended up down 2.6%. And as we talked about previously, anytime the NASDAQ is down more than 2%, that's going to be a bottom decile day for the market. And then down more than 2.5%, that's going to be one of the worst 10 days in the last year. And we've actually seen three of those worst 10 days come within the last 2 weeks. Those were January 5th, January 13th, and then of course today slotting in at the eighth worst day in the last year. So tough environment for stocks right now, especially for growth stocks. I think Tesla holding up pretty well. And while it was down today, still nice to see that overperformance. Yields were up again pretty significantly today, with the 10-year approaching 1.9%, now sitting at a new 52-week high. As for the NASDAQ, it's now sitting at a 3-month low. Remember, the next Federal Reserve meeting, that's going to happen on January 25th and 26th, so that is going to overlap actually with Tesla's earnings report. All right, getting into Tesla-specific news, first just a really quick update on full self-driving. As expected, as Elon had previously indicated, Tesla has now increased the price of the full self-driving option in the United States from $10,000 now to $12,000. We've talked about this in detail previously, so nothing more that I have to add on that. Next up, we've got a new price target increase. This is from Credit Suisse. They have raised their Tesla price target from $830 previously now to $1,025, but they've also increased their blue sky or sort of bull case from $1,200 previously, now all the way up to $1,700. And they've increased their gray sky case or their bear case from $450 to $530 per share. This was one of those more robust analyst notes. They definitely put a lot of work into this, spent a lot of time on it. It wasn't just a list of five questions like we may have seen on some other occasions. This was about 30 pages long and some good thoughts in here that I thought were worth taking the time to go through and then share my thoughts on. They kick it off trying to summarize the note into four themes, the first of which they list as capacity expansion, and they acknowledge something here that has been a tenet of the bull case for a long time. The first sentence of this entire 30-page note reads, quote, "With Tesla's demand exceeding supply, likely for the foreseeable future, Tesla's path of volume will be purely a function of its production," end quote. They are finally getting it. I think Tesla themselves has talked about this. This has been a transformational year for electric vehicles. The demand has shown to be robust. That confidence that permeates in and around the industry is extremely helpful for Tesla to be able to ramp as quickly as they want to ramp and achieve those goals that they do have on the production side. And then as far as investors go, that confidence in demand and specifically the acknowledgement of that confidence, that removes a huge amount of uncertainty, which in turn provides a ton of strength for the valuation, and it's difficult to overstate the impact of that. We probably don't talk about it enough because, again, it's been a tenet of the bull case for so long. So I was really happy to see that idea at the very top of this note. Their second theme is gross margin. Throughout the note, they're particularly interested in this for the fourth quarter, but they do expect Tesla's strong gross margin to continue the trajectory from 2021, despite some raw materials and production ramp headwinds. The third theme they highlight is the updated product roadmap that we expect to hear on Tesla's earnings call next week. They say they are most keen to learn a little bit more about the so-called Model 2. Personally, I've been thinking more about the roadmap in terms of what to expect from Austin, Berlin, the Cybertruck, the Roadster, the Semi, things that we kind of know about already. I don't really expect them to talk much about a next generation cheaper vehicle. Everybody knows it's coming, and that's really all we need to know at this point. I mean, all you need to do is look up a couple points. Tesla's demand is there, as is the confidence in that demand. So what purpose does it serve to talk about something that will drive demand before it's really necessary? If it's brought up at all, I would just expect confirmation that it's still on the roadmap, probably no timeline. And if they did get a little bit more specific, I wouldn't really expect any of that to be necessarily positive or more precisely interpreted as a positive. Certainly could be wrong about that, but that's just my expectation heading into next week. Their fourth theme then is batteries, which I think kind of should just always be in that top set of focuses. A little bit further down the note, they share some of their thoughts on the stock specifically, and I think it captures well a couple of ideas that we've been circling for quite some time now. First, they say that they do believe that favorable fundamentals, so earning expansion, volume growth, things like that, can continue to support Tesla stock, but non-fundamental factors will also need to remain supportive. So I tend to agree with this in the short term, let's call that, 6 months or whatever. Tesla's earnings growth is going to be great, but we're definitely still in that price to earnings compression stage where it is a little bit arbitrary, whether Tesla gets a 180 price to earnings or 120. Those are the type of numbers we're heading towards very quickly, but the difference in those, that yields a 50% difference in the stock price, and a lot of that's going to be influenced by just the macro environment as a whole. When we get a year, 2 years down the line, a lot of that compression is going to have happened. A lot of the trajectory is going to be longer established and clearer. Berlin and Austin will be where Shanghai is now, and people will start to realize how much is left for both of those factories. There's really countless things to be excited about, and that should support the valuation right now as well. But in a rising interest rate environment, there's just going to be some fear and some suppression on these high price to earnings multiple companies, high growth companies. And for better or worse, Tesla's going to get lumped in with that. The nice thing about that is it does create a lot of opportunity, and thankfully, I think the fundamentals are very strongly on our side to a degree that the market really doesn't get. So ultimately, for longer-term shareholders, it's probably a good thing. You just got to be careful with leverage and options and all that fun stuff. Also, if and when the macro environment uncertainty does crystallize, that should provide a nice little wave for Tesla to ride back up, and if that does happen, that probably is going to coincide with Tesla's fundamentals coming into focus. Right now, I think everybody is kind of watching for trajectories to flip either way, so I guess the overall point is just be ready for volatility, up or down, as this plays out from my assessment largely over, I think, the next quarter or so. All right, anyway, a couple other things I wanted to highlight from this note. When they talk about raising their price target, they do share that they raised their 2022 earnings per share estimates from $8.34 previously all the way up to $12.66. So a 52% increase to their earnings forecast in just the first year of their model. Despite that, only a 23% increase here to their price target. So this is the effect we talked about a couple weeks back. Growth is wildly surpassing analyst expectations. That should lead to forecasts for faster growth, and faster growth should lead to higher multiples, but instead what we're seeing all these analysts do is show a compressed multiple. Why we're seeing that is because analysts just don't want to reflect that type of performance longer term. So yeah, they might increase their 2022 targets, but beating expectations in 1 year doesn't do anything to the terminal value of the company. So in this case with Credit Suisse, what we're seeing is that they've only increased their 2030 expectation from 6.3 million up to 7.1 million deliveries, a 12% increase. What was really interesting to me was that Credit Suisse actually directly commented on this idea in their note. They said that improved fundamentals played a greater role in 2021 performance than multiple expansion, pointing out that 2023 earnings per share estimates more than doubled throughout the year, but that the enterprise value to sales multiple only slightly improved year over year. And that's a sales multiple, so only indirectly does that capture profitability. It would have been easier to just explain it by saying that the forward earnings multiple compressed significantly. Now, with a high multiple company, this is fine. It's going to work for a little while, but at a certain point, if Tesla's growth continues like they have planned, then all of a sudden things swing back really, really hard in the other direction. This is kind of what we saw play out in 2019 and 2020, where all of a sudden everyone was kind of like, oh, this valuation makes no sense at all. That's basically what's happened to analysts on the lower end of the price target range, like JP Morgan, for example, where they've got these super low price targets that they just have to then keep doubling every year to keep their forward earnings multiple even in the same realm as other established lower growth companies. The longer these analysts hang out at this $1,000 price target level, the closer that gets to happening again. Now, obviously it won't be to the same degree that it was back in 2019, 2020, unless Tesla suddenly fully solves level 5 full self-driving or something like that, but just as a concept, you can start to see some of that building. I mean, case in point, this Credit Suisse note, they expect about 1.5 million vehicles delivered for 2022, then only 2 million in 2023 and 2.4 million in 2024. So they have Tesla's growth slowing down from 57%, then to 36%, then to 20% over the next 3 years. And then, of course, they only have 7 million for 2030 versus Tesla's target of 20 million deliveries. Analysts just don't want to forecast Tesla's growth continuing, so every year that it does, that cushion of multiple compression that exists right now, that goes away, and it can go away pretty quick. So I know we spent a lot of time on that, but I do think it's a pretty fundamental concept to what we're going to see play out over the next couple of years. The last thing from this note that I want to highlight is Credit Suisse actually getting a little bit sentimental here. They say, quote, "Lastly, we provide a bit of a retrospective and a hat tip not only to Tesla on unlocking the potential that bulls had always hoped for, but also a hat tip to the long-term bulls who stood by Tesla 2.5 to 3 years ago at a time when the outlook on Tesla was not nearly as bright as it is today," end quote. Well, thank you, Credit Suisse. That's really nice to hear. And if you're a listener and you're in that group, go ahead and give yourself a pat on the back there from Credit Suisse. All right, next here, I just wanted to quickly follow up on that graphite supply conversation we had had yesterday about this mine in Mozambique that Tesla's sourcing from, 8,000 tons per year. I mentioned I wasn't sure how many vehicles that could supply, so I did do a little bit more research on that. Found some sources saying 56 kilograms of graphite per EV, 100 kilograms per EV, up to 85 kilograms for the Model S. Saw some other sources saying 70, so somewhere in that 50 to 100 kilogram range seems to be about right. So if we assume 75, the contract we talked about yesterday would be in the ballpark of 100,000 EVs per year. So a decent chunk, but definitely a small part of Tesla's needs. Next is a little bit of Tesla-related news from Ford. Ford and security company ADT have announced a $105 million joint venture called Canopy to develop and market in-vehicle security systems for commercial and retail customers. The standalone systems, due out in about 12 months, will employ video cameras to monitor vehicles and equipment stowed in them. Customers will also be able to live stream via a mobile app. This sounds awfully familiar. I can't quite place those features. Hey, sounds like a great idea though, and just kind of another example of Tesla's vertical integration, where Ford's got to spend time and money going out and finding a partner to implement a feature like Sentry Mode. While we're talking about Ford, I did want to follow up on the valuation of Ford, just because I'd mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago that Ford had hit a $100 billion market cap and was trading at a 35 price-to-earnings multiple. I did have a little bit more time to look into that, and unsurprisingly, there were a couple factors influencing that multiple. So last year, Q4, December 2020, Ford had posted like a $2.8 billion loss, and part of that was because of a net income adjustment for what Ford would call a one-time item due to some pension-related things. Anyway, when Ford reports their most recent fourth quarter in a couple of weeks, that fourth quarter from last year will drop off, and their price-to-earnings ratio, that'll fall down to about 12x or 13x. But it is also important to note that they did recognize in that trailing 12-month period a $902 million gain from Rivian. That should probably be excluded as well, so more like 14 or 15x trailing 12 months price-to-earnings. Now, I still think it's too expensive, but obviously doesn't look as egregious as that 35x multiple. Next up, we've got some more interesting comments from Stellantis' CEO, Carlos Tavares, who continues to, in a not-so-subtle way, speak out against electrification. He said in a recent joint interview with four different European publications, quote, "What is clear is that electrification is a technology chosen by politicians, not by industry," end quote. I guess technically true if by industry he means legacy automakers. They're certainly not on average choosing electrification, but it's pretty clear that the customers are fans. In this interview, then, he also raises concerns around the environmental impact of EVs, saying that there are cheaper and faster ways of reducing carbon emissions. Quote, "Given the current European energy mix, an electric car needs to drive 70,000 kilometers to compensate for the carbon footprint of manufacturing the battery and to start catching up with a light hybrid vehicle, which costs half as much as an EV," end quote. Well, first off, I doubt that last part is true, considering the price of the Fiat 500 internal combustion engine vehicle is two-thirds as expensive as the fully electric version. A plug-in hybrid is going to be more expensive than that, so that doesn't track. As for the 70,000 kilometers thing, well, I guess it's a good thing that pretty much every single car is going to last longer than 70,000 kilometers or 43,000 miles. So, sounds like a win for EVs, and even if not, that's also assuming that a plug-in hybrid is used exactly as tested, always plugged in every time it has an opportunity to be, which we know is not the reality. Plus, everything that I've said before, plug-in hybrids are a stopgap. They're just going to delay transition over to fully electric, which we actually need to be sustainable. But that delay is exactly what Tavares wants, and that's what he's trying to argue in favor of. Thankfully, unlike what he says, it's not just politicians that are making this push, it's customers as well. All right, moving on then, last item for today, just a little bit more information on that Dawn Project stuff that we talked about yesterday. Dan O'Dowd, Green Hill Software CEO, who placed that ad, was on CNBC today. Yes, I know, eye roll for giving this more attention. I'll talk about that after we talk about these clips, but I think the interview gives a little bit more insight into what he's thinking and also offers a little bit of clarity and confirmation on things we discussed yesterday. And I do think the host was kind of funny in how he asked some of these questions. So if no other reason, maybe a little bit of entertainment from that as well.
Dan, it's good to have you this morning. I read that ad. I'm sure many others read it as well. It's alarming, but I just wonder, why are you doing this?
Well, the history of a very important factor in modern history is this commitment to the internet, connecting everything up to it, to the internet. And every company on the planet, everybody is totally committed to hooking everything up to the internet as quickly as possible. And this has created a really big problem because all this software, I mean, ask anybody, they'll tell you everything can be hacked, all the software can be hacked. But what we're doing is connecting up the things that our lives depend on. The power grid, cars, water treatment plants, hospitals, they're all being connected up to the internet, and it's all that software is very easily hackable.
Right, so the concern itself is not like completely invalid. Obviously, this is something that Tesla itself also spends a lot of time thinking about too. Elon had even joked a few years back about the possibility existing of someone being able to gain fleet-wide access and then, as a joke, send all the cars to Rhode Island, and he said that that would be the end of Tesla and there'd be a lot of angry people in Rhode Island. A few months prior to that, someone actually had gained fleet-wide access. Thankfully, it was someone that was willing to alert Tesla of what they were finding, but they were, for example, actually able to activate the summon feature on any vehicle in the fleet all the way across the country. So the concern is not unfounded. I think how he presents it as someone being able to easily do this is not the case. The person that did this previously actually shared some of that process and about a year ago added some annotations to that process saying that, quote, "Keep in mind that all the vulnerabilities below were mitigated and patched immediately by Tesla back when this was reported in 2017. Since then, their overall security has greatly improved. A relatively simple attack like this would not be possible," end quote. Obviously, that doesn't mean that something more complex would not be at all possible, but as Elon kind of implied, there would be very few things, if any, as critical to Tesla's survival as this security. And it should also be noted that Summon is a remote control feature. There's a huge difference in accessing and activating a remote control feature versus something like, oh, just taking over all the cars and being able to control them all simultaneously. A lot of what FSD is doing is obviously localized to the individual vehicle, so definitely not an expert in this space, but my perception is that O'Dowd is being a little bit hyperbolic here, and that also fits with Elon's little quip here about sending all the cars to Rhode Island. That would track with a summon type of feature versus how O'Dowd explained it later on in the interview, basically saying someone could tell the entire fleet to just swerve into oncoming traffic or something like that. So that's that piece of it. And then the host also picked up on what I was talking about yesterday, that the ad didn't really match any of those concerns. That's not what it was about. So I kind of had to chuckle at this clip as well.
Yeah, that's a scary prospect. But your ad didn't focus on that as much as it focused on what you said was analyzing many hours of YouTube videos and just finding that, at least according to what you saw, the self-driving function on these Teslas commits more than 1,000 times as many critical errors as human drivers. I mean, you weren't focused on hacking as much as you simply are, am I wrong, focused on what you feel is a faulty software program?
Well, it's the overall mission of the Dawn Project is both security and safety. It's all about safety. In this particular case, the situation is very egregious. The software, it does not work.
I was glad to see CNBC picked up on this as well. Kind of the last thing from this, they did ask him if he had a financial interest in Tesla. He said no financial interest. He does own 3 Teslas, 2 Roadsters, a Model S. Then he said, if you're talking about being in the competition, like, yeah, I work with legacy automakers. Did not explicitly mention Mobileye, but his thought was that, hey, if competition isn't going to be calling you out, then no one is. So he doesn't see any problem with that. So that is that. The last thing that I'll say on this is that I know I'm going to get questions on why are we talking about this again? Why give it attention? Fair questions. I just wanted to give my answer. First off, I can't just ignore Tesla stories that are dominating the overall media coverage. Even if I don't think they have much merit, I can't just dismiss something without giving my reasons for that. And in terms of attention, this audience isn't going to add any business to this person. It's not beneficial for them, but this might enlighten people for conversations that can help them spread actual truth about the conversation when it comes up with others. That's a huge part of what Tesla Daily has always been about, understanding what's being talked about, whether it has merit, whether it doesn't, and most importantly, the reasons behind that. If no one actually looks into this and takes the time to explain a different point of view, that's going to be a way bigger win for these types of people than any additional attention from this channel. Now, if I were CNBC, maybe I'd have a little bit of a different viewpoint on that because it would be a different audience and I would approach it differently, but then I probably wouldn't be CNBC. So those are my thoughts. Hope that makes sense. And I specifically put this at the end so if people didn't want to tune into it, you can obviously just drop off. I do also hope I was able to provide some context that maybe people didn't have or haven't thought about for a while. So anyway, with that, we'll wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, January 19th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.